Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue on this Monday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Joining us today, Alan Shartok from WAMC, our Daily Gazette editor, Judy Patrick, and associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, all.
Hi, Ray.
Did we have a nice weekend?
Good morning. Oh, yes.
And happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, it's today, eh?
It is.
I see.
It is.
Ray Ograff, don't you know it?
I must confess, it's not on the radar, but that's good. If you guys enjoy that stuff, good for you. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let's kick it off this morning with, Crimean Parliament votes to secede from Ukraine. This is from the New York Times. A day after a contested referendum, legislators in Crimea moved swiftly on Monday to begin the process of splitting from Ukraine, with the regional parliament declaring that Crimea is an independent state with special status for the city of Sevastopol, or Sevastopol, if you prefer. While the ballot on Sunday has been rejected in the West, and by the government in Kiev, the legislators asserted that the laws of Ukraine no longer applied to Crimea and that the state funds and all other state property of Ukraine and Crimea had been transferred to the new state. Alan.
Well, they always had a certain modicum of independence in Crimea. So that starts it. I got a letter, a very angry letter from a guy who said, you people are disgraceful because you don't recognize that that we have a situation in which the people in the rest of it, the Kievian side of things, were in an illegal revolution. They deposed an established government. And, of course, we did the same thing around 1776, this kind of thing does happen. And that there were historic relationships between the Russians. Now, as for Putin, he's doing extremely well in Russia. You know, the polls are all massively in his favor. They think he's done the right thing. It's clear he's going to try to bring back, some of the power of the Russian Federation. It used to be called the Soviet Union. Before that, it had other names. There was a great suffering of prestige in Russia. And so now he gets, on his own terms, to bring this back. He'll get into a lot of trouble if he goes anywhere else besides Crimea. That's my view.
Okay. Judy, you know, the referendum was 96.77% in favor. Is that even possible?
Well, you know, on the one hand, you do have a large majority of these people turning out and voting in favor of joining Russia. But on the other hand, you have these referendums that came out of nowhere very quickly. And in this country, our elections are pretty deliberate and well thought out. So it is undeniable that the people in Crimea seem to want to be with Russia, but there are all sorts of practical issues involved, and we really have to analyze whether or not this vote was real.
Well, there's, I think, some groups like the Tatars were boycotting it, you know, and there was some evidence that, you know, even some of the Ukraine-leaning Crimeans, if there are any, and depending on what surveys you look at, I guess there's some older population census that say that, you know, while the majority of the people were Russian-leaning, there was a lot of other, you know, people who were supporting different ethnic groups. And, you know, if they weren't participating in it out of protest, you would get that. But did you know that North Korea just had an election and 100%
wow.
of the people voted for the re-election?
That's a shocker.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
So this fell short of that.
Missiles they just sent right.
Yeah.
to see Japan.
All right. Assuming that maybe 96.7% is a bit much, but assuming that the will of the people by a large majority is in fact in favor of this, at what point, and we saw this in Egypt too, where there was a change from a staunch ally of the U.S., and there was a changing of the guard, and we let it happen. At what point does the West say, hey, Crimea is gone. It's going to be part of Russia. Alan.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I mean, I think that's exactly what that's the reality. As Governor Cuomo has said many times here in New York State, it is what it is. And that's what he
Whatever
said.
Whatever that means.
It is what it is.
I know what it means.
Yeah. I mean, it's a reality. And it's not going to be, it's not changeable, I think. Obviously, I think he gets into terrible trouble if he goes into Estonia or into one of these other, Moldova, Latvia, one of these other, places.
But you do have a situation because of the way the Soviet Union kind of spread its influence that they went into places like Estonia and import, you know, exported Soviets, Russians, to live there. So there is an embedded Russian culture in all of these Eastern Bloc countries, even after, long after the breakup of the Soviet Union. And there is some sympathy to it, not perhaps in the numbers of Crimea.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Judy Patrick is here. Mike Spain and Alan Shartok. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. Now, dovetailing with recent events in Crimea is a piece from the New York Times. I think it was in yesterday's Times. And I'll throw this out to the panel. Global crisis put Obama's crises put Obama's strategy of caution to the test. For 5 years, President Obama has consciously recast how America engages with the world's toughest customers. But with Russia poised to annex Crimea after Sunday's referendum, with a mounting threat to the rest of Ukraine, and with the carnage in Syria accelerating, Mr. Obama's strategy is now under greater stress than at any time in his presidency. As he learned to play the long game, the Treasury Department, and again, this is quoting from the New York Times, the Treasury Department became Mr. Obama's favorite non-combatant command. But so far as those tools go, or even the threat of them, have proved frustratingly ineffective in the most recent cases. Sanctions and modest help to the Syrian rebels have failed to halt the slaughter. The White House was taken a bit by surprise by Putin's move to invade Crimea. In short, America's adversaries are testing the limits of America's post-Iraq, post-Afghanistan moment. Throw it to Mike first.
Well, it's pretty obvious that adversaries around the globe know of the fatigue that the U.S. has for war after Iraq and after Afghanistan. The U.S. Sentiment is not to get involved. It's kind of returning to somewhat of an isolationist sentiment, maybe which was after World War One and preceded World War II. Until something dramatic happens, Americans don't want to send their kids off to die in foreign lands, have them come home, have the others come home crippled, you know, this huge debt while America suffers and there's nothing to show for it. I mean, Iraq seems to be in as much turmoil or more turmoil than before we invaded there. And, you know, Afghanistan, who knows what's going to happen, because we're not even in any clear path to keep a presence there after we're out of there at the end of this year. So, you know, people don't have a stomach for engagement in these foreign wars, and others are taking advantage of that. They're rushing in.
In the meantime, you got John McCain over in Kiev making noises that the president is not up to the job. And it's not good, because you ask anybody, okay, who's unhappy, what would you do? And they say, I don't know. So it's Obama is, it's his watch. He's there. We're not happy about what happened in Crimea. So we say, you could have done better because you're there. But could he have?
But is this, and Judy, I'll throw it to you, but is this a situation where the sort of light footprint policy President Obama consciously instituted at the beginning of his first term, is that now showing potential adversaries, Russia, China, who has made moves, you know, in the South China Sea, is in fact our policy of non sort of the light footprint emboldening potential adversaries, or certainly strategic foes in different spheres.
You know, I would argue, on the other hand, that maybe this is something that's welcome throughout the world, because for many years America was perceived as a big bully that was stomping all over the rights and of many small countries, and that we did have this negative perception out there. Sure, it's amazing that the White House can be taken by surprise by Putin's actions in Crimea, and it's certainly disheartening to the American public. But in Obama himself, in this piece, has acknowledged that he is managing an era of American retrenchment, throughout the world. So does it embolden China and Russia? I don't think.
It seems to.
Putin would have done what he'd done. No matter what. I think Putin would have made that move.
Well, that's a very good point. I'm really glad you made it, which is that from the very beginning, when there was this sense that people in Ukraine were unhappy about this shift towards the Russians, this shift backwards towards the Russians. And there was a sense from the very beginning that Putin might not take it lying down. And that's exactly, what has happened. But, Ray, I have a little quarrel with you as you ask the question.
I'm not surprised.
Yes, right. And you keep talking about the light footprint. I don't know what that means, the light footprint.
Well, that's how he described it. He described the, quote, dumb wars of occupation being Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And there was that whole leading from behind bit in Libya.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think he prefers the light footprint to that.
Yeah.
So it's basically out of his mouth, not mine.
I think the way in which the phrase is used is very telling. If you have him saying we have to do some retrenchment, that's one thing. If you have, a conservative commentator saying he walks with a light footprint, that is more accusatory than what I think the president is talking about.
Okay. And then we go to Iran, where nuclear talks are underway and will be resuming again. Hang on. Mr. Hopper, let's take a break. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Before we shift gears and go to Iran, which really isn't shifting gears because it's all part of the same thing, we'll take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Back in a flash.
Support comes from Allardyce Ace Building Supply, providing lumber and building supplies for commercial and home needs with locations in Malta, Saratoga Springs, and Milton, New York. Allardyce.com. Affordable self-storage in Rhinebeck, Kingston, and Hudson, in support and appreciation of Hudson Valley Hospice serving Dutchess and Ulster counties, working to enhance the quality of living for those near the end of life, hvhospice.org. And WAMC's Spotlight on Underwriters, this month featuring news about Armory Fiat and Twillez Ford Gold Butler and Monroe LLP, WAMC.org.
The Roundtable on WAMC. Our panel this morning, Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette, Mike Spain of the Times Union, WAMC's Alan Shartok. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 24 minutes after 9 o'clock, we've been talking about Ukraine and Crimea and America's policy of pulling back a little bit from foreign power assertion. And now comes this from the AP. Iran's former minister said Sunday his country does not expect to cement a final deal in the coming round of nuclear talks with world powers. The foreign minister spoke to reporters after meeting his Belarusian visiting counterpart, Vladimir Makai. We don't expect to reach a deal in this round of talks, nor was a deal on the agenda for this round of talks. We have agreed to discuss a number of issues in this round. Does anything get done?
Maybe not. I mean, if apparently the Ayatollah, the chief guy over there, is saying put a hold on this to the new, more progressive president. But they are, there was tremendous pressure on the Iranians from the Israelis, who were talking about, at least we think we're talking about, bombing the nuclear facility, which they have done in the past.
Israel has done that, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm, yes, exactly. I think that the pressure was great. They agreed to the talks. Now they're putting their fingers to their noses and they're saying no. Fooled you.
Mike?
Well, it's just that with the Russians had a significant role in these negotiations with Iran. And with the tension now, the new tension because of Crimea, between the U.S. and the Russians and the West and the Russians, how can this proceed? It will certainly be impacted by it. And as it drags out, there were some concessions already made by the West for Iran. So what's going to happen to those? Are they going to go back on hold? Or are they going to continue? Is it just going to be aimless? Mm. It will be impacted by all
Very
this,
hard
no
to
question.
Take it back once you gave them.
Right.
Yeah, my understanding was it was going to be a dragged out process because there are so many details to be worked out. But there is pressure to get these sanctions lifted so this country can start to recover from the poverty it's been in.
You know, one of the fascinating things about this is always you put yourself in Putin's head and whether you think what could he be thinking, and you say, well, maybe, you know, there's some things that he's thinking that we're not. And then you take a look at the Iranians, and there is this point they keep making: you have nuclear weapons, why aren't we allowed to have nuclear weapons? Why are we allowed? And by the way, they've never admitted to nuclear weapons. Why can't we have nuclear facilities? Okay, so we're Americans, we step back, we don't like that. It endangers the world. We think they're a little nuts, which they are sometimes, and so we don't want it to happen. But by putting yourself into the central question of why is it all right that we have it but that you don't, you know, that's an interesting issue.
Well, there's the UN Non-Proliferation Treaty, right, which was designed to stop this. Everyone acknowledged nukes not a great idea.
Are we in?
Are we in?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, currently, yeah. I mean,
No. The question is, are we in that we got rid of our nuclear weapons?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
No, but we've cut them, and we've also, we don't produce new nuclear
how many
weapons.
How many of those bombs do you think it would take to
not many.
End mankind as we know it, we've cut them?
This is back to the nuclear freeze rhetoric.
Yeah,
you're right. It's easy to make that case, but the whole point was that nobody else would gain that and that there would be a backing off over time, and at least not putting those weapons in the hands of other people is a good idea.
Okay, but I'm not making the argument.
Right.
I'm, again, just trying to
get
into
the head. Right, but I see it from
their
perspective.
Into the head of what they're saying and what they're thinking. I'd love it if we got rid of all of them. But,
of course. But you're right. I mean, it's a difficult one because they're not really acknowledging that they have anything other than peaceful uses of nuclear power in mind. And yet...
nobody believes him.
Yeah, and no one believes him.
Are these sanctions? Now, the sanctions have been pretty strong.
Oh, yeah.
Have they worked? I mean, has the Iranian policy changed in any way? I mean, they still say we have the right to do pretty much whatever we want, treaty or no treaty.
But they're at the table, and they are discussing that, and I think that's a substantial capitulation on their part.
I suppose. Mike?
Well, it's you're right. I agree with Judy. The fact that they're even engaged is a big change. But you're right, Ray, in that, you know, they'll agree to something and then they'll go back home and publicly say that something that contradicts that, like we're not giving up our right to have nuclear power,
right.
Even though they'll kind of agree to at the international table, they'll come back and say that's not our intention. So they're a little bit schizophrenic here. They're speaking two different sides of the mouth.
Right, we're just about out of time. I mean, Israel says they're just buying time here. And while all this chit-chat goes on, the research goes on, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not there, but Israel certainly has a point to be made there. The clock is ticking, and in fact, the clock is ticking. It is 9:29 and 30 seconds. We have to take a break. We will play some news, and then we'll back and talk about, once again, Flight 370.
You're a good man, Ray.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:36 is the time. It's the panel for this morning. Joe Donahue is out. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe. Alan Shartok is here. Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette and Mike Spain of the Times Union.
Two historic enemies.
Oh, they are?
Well, they've been very
civil.
The Times Union and the Daily Gazette, they're the two major powerhouses in our region.
Yep.
And there's all kinds of lore. Somebody could write a novel about
the
relationship between these two papers. Well, you know, who goes into what territory, who stays out of what territory. There's been a lot of talk about that over the years.
You know, use of the term historic, I'm feeling old.
Mm. Well, I didn't say you were historic. I said the paper.
Historic
the rivalry.
Yes.
The rivalry was historic.
Right. I think the region is fortunate to have so many viable daily newspapers.
You mean let a thousand flowers bloom?
Yes.
Which is what I always say when I lie.
So
people come in and say, there's a new public radio station. They always come to me, and what am I going to say? You know, I don't like it.
Let a thousand flowers bloom.
I always say, as Chairman Mao said, let a thousand flowers.
Well, there won't be any new daily newspapers starting up around here. I don't suspect.
Never know.
All right. Well, the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, the plot continues to thicken. Now, it's 10 days since the flight disappeared. Here is what they're thinking as of this morning. that there was a report the plane flew low to avoid radar. This is from CNN. Whoever was flying the airplane may have flown below 5,000 feet and used mountainous terrain as cover to avoid being detected by radar. The search is now expanding into a huge area of
the world.
The land and sea, 11 countries and deep oceans. Malaysia's prime minister... Well,
they're getting touchy now. The Malaysians are getting touchy.
I don't think the Malaysians were quite ready for the onslaught of press conferences because they're not handling it all too well. Malaysia's prime minister has said that somebody deliberately steered the plane off course. That means the pilots have become one obvious focus of the investigation. And
Is that still the prime minister speaking when he says the pilots are becoming one aspect, or is that you?
He says that they deliberately steered the plane off course. The Malaysian police are investigating a flight simulator seized from one of the pilots' homes.
Oh, my.
So where does this end, and when does this end? Mike Spain, you have all the answers.
I do, and I know exactly. No. you know, the swath of territory now is from the Indian Ocean south of India all the way up to Kazakhstan, another former Russian republic. And I mean, one of the explanations could be that one of the pilots, or perhaps the co-pilot, the pilot seems to be more seasoned and more established, and everybody is out vouching for him. The co-pilot's fairly new. Perhaps he might be the problem. But it could be a case of pilot suicide, intentional, just they plan to commit suicide and do it in a glorious way somehow. Or it could be that they had a plan to land it someplace and it failed and it crashed into the ocean. It could be, you know, there was a story over the weekend that there's 300 somewhat places, airstrips where a plane like this could land in that trajectory, but how one could do it and remain undetected is beyond belief.
Well, I think that's the point about flying below 5,000 feet when you're sort of in that remote area.
So there's some airstrip up near the base of the Himalayas where it pulls in and nobody knows it.
Well, at one point I read that that not only was it low, but that it was very high in the 40,000.
Over 40,000.
Over 40,000.
For some time.
You know.
Well, it just shows you that there's so much contradictory information.
Well, also, from the, you just named it, Mike, the Department of Could-Bes.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you believe that there is a, that there is life anywhere else in this universe and universes beyond?
Well, let's take this little detour, shall we, Mom?
this is the same kind of detour that plane took over Malaysia.
That's Twilight Zone. The reason I asked. That's right. You know, I mean, those are those Bermuda things and the rest. Do I seriously believe that a giant spaceship had been sucking them up over 40,000 feet and then whoosh, and brought the plane in and now we'll never see them again? Yeah. Do I believe that? No. But do I believe that we are now into the absurd position of everybody raising what could be?
It's a riveting story, and it has been for the last 10 days. I know that my mother spent the entire day yesterday glued to CNN to figure out what was going on with this plane.
Really?
But, you know, it's interesting that in this day and age that you can have 260 people aboard a plane and nobody, you know, nobody can reach out. I mean, when during 911, people were making cell phone calls from planes. Obviously, the connections were much better. But to just have these people vanish off the face of the earth is incredible.
Yeah, that is the incredible part of it. And the hope is that if they do ever locate the wreckage of this plane, that maybe somebody was taking notes or recording a diary or something on one of their devices, and it somehow might have survived, but probably not. Answer questions.
We do hear a lot, and they do, as Alan points out, the theories get wilder and wilder. Now, we know that at 8:11 a.m. of that day, more than 7 hours after takeoff, a satellite made the last electronic connection known as a handshake with the plane. But that doesn't mean the plane was in the air. That doesn't mean they know where the plane was. The whole thing is, and today on CNN, this very early this morning, they had an English aviation expert who said, you know, this could still be accidental. Where like a computer shutting down, systems shut down in series, and this still could be completely not criminal related, not terrorism related, but an accident. However, the plane being in the air, or at least talking to satellites for 7 hours, certainly adds to the mystery.
Well, I think that's completely plausible. One of the things you do when you have a electronic malfunction is you reboot, Control-Alt-Delete, and maybe it didn't reboot. And it was on automatic pilot during that time, and that just continued. I mean, you know, We can sit here for hours.
And we do.
We aren't going to answer
it. And we do.
It.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens, and we follow it. And, you know, we've been now talking about this for how many shows now, and we still don't know anything. So,
you know, it's a lesson in patience, waiting for all the facts to come in and just monitoring the situation.
But it's a problem for us, and it's a microcosm of the problems faced by the networks. People are hungry for information, and they'll spit it out as speculative as it is. Now, we have an hour to fill, and we only talk about this for maybe 10 or 15 minutes every show. But you got a 24/7 news cycle. There are some wacky theories. Although Alan's theory, I haven't heard that on the networks yet about the mothership coming down and swooping the plane up.
And a big mothership it would have to be.
Okay, let's take a break. It's the Roundtable. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll be back.
Support comes from Sunwood Builders, Amherst. Over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com. And Healthy Living Market and Cafe. Working to support local agriculture with organic products, community outreach, and jobs. Open 7 days a week at the Wilton Mall. HealthyLivingMarket.com.
Roundtable on WAMC on your Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's 9:44, and our panel is Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, Mike Spain of the Albany Times Union, and our own WAMC's Alan Shartok. Alan, we have some mail.
We do. On Sunday, in listening to Les Show, the 1 p.m. NPR commentary program. No.
Wait, what?
Les Show. You know, Les Show,
yeah.
Our show.
Okay. But this is not about us, right?
Well, I don't know. Speaker mentioned that three of the several ministers of the Ukrainian government were members of the neo-Nazi party.
Ah.
To what degree do you think the Russians took that into consideration in their move to, in quotes, protect ethnic Russians? That's from Paul.
Well, great question. Anybody?
Well, there is a history of neo-Nazi groups and powerful groups in the Ukraine, and or Ukraine. And I have to tell you that the very first day we started talking about this, Rosemary Armeo mentioned that. So there is that. It's complicated. It is complicated. There's no question.
It's a good pretext if you had that plan to go in anyway.
Well, especially since you've got that your naval base there, and you know, and you've got all those Russians we've been talking about who you put in there, and then it's extraordinarily popular. But it may be. Put another way, who knows?
Well, not to belabor the point,
sure.
but certainly the real question for me is whether this had been long planned by Putin or if he just saw an opportunity and seized it on the spot. But it certainly caught the U.S. by surprise. Where was the CIA on this one, huh?
By the way, some developing news just handed to me. A strongly felt earthquake has rolled across Los Angeles. The rolling quake struck shortly before 6:30 a.m., so that would be, I guess, 9:30 our time. There is no immediate word from authorities on the magnitude of the quake, but that's what we have, and we're following that, and we'll have that for you.
Okay, so then also we heard from somebody. It's probably not a good idea to keep saying that the majority of the Crimean people voted to join Russia if we do not have the legitimate stats regarding how many people registered to vote, what the official population was, and so on. The media picks up simple and easily repeated statements and gets embedded in the ground of facts.
Okay, all right, well.
Well, there is that.
You have anything else?
Yeah, well, only that he goes on. It might be best for the roundtable to quote "real" in capital letters. Foreign policy experts such as Farid Zakaria or David Ignatius, they have no sour grapes. It's time and it's quick and easy to grab a John McCain soundbite like everyone else. It might be better to elevate the discussion with people.
Okay,
who
well,
are
we'll tell the New York
things.
Times, too, who I was quoting on the 96.7%. So we'll mention that to them as well.
Well, yes. And I think we sort of, and Judy did, and I know Mike did, talk about the fact that we did not have the full story from Crimea and
Indeed.
The elections.
Indeed. Yeah. All right. Any other email there, sir?
No. Oh, no. There is one more that
okay.
I should read to you.
This is not spam.
It is spam.
Okay.
It is spam. It's from this guy who says, I'm a banking staff for the Hong Kong.
Oh, really? Oh, you know, I sent my social security number in and the routing number for my bank. I have not seen the deposit yet, but I will let you know. And I'll certainly be making a pledge during the next fund drive with my millions of pounds sterling.
Certainly.
All right. So here we go. This is from Mike's Fine Times Union, Brian Fitzgerald. Lessons in tweaking guns, an interesting story. It hasn't stopped yet.
You know, April 15th, less than a month away, one provision of the New York State's SAFE Act, which was hastily passed last year, which put restrictions on the ownership of certain kinds of guns and assault weapons. April 15th is the deadline when if you own one of these assault weapons under New York's definition of an assault weapon, you need to register it. And there was a group meeting in Saratoga Springs called NY2A, and it's a statewide group that is against the SAFE Act. And they were rallying to tell people that there's a couple of things that they can do. One is they, without condoning it, they said they have the option of committing an act of civil disobedience and not registering their assault weapons by April 15th. And authorities are mum about what they'll do about that and how they would even know you have
and
an assault
weapon.
Sheriffs,
and we have sheriffs, Mike, who are saying they won't enforce it.
Well, sheriff candidates who said that.
Yeah.
And some in certainly indicating that. And then you have a number of modifications. Mostly this has to do with a rifle known as the AR-15. And there's things you can do to install a permanent magazine on it so you can't pull a magazine off and put another one on in a giant assault. If you do something to make it impossible to screw a bayonet onto it, that will also help reduce it or take it out of the category of assault weapon. And there's something you can do with the butt of the rifle. But there's these modifications. Even the state on its own website tells you what you can do. But it's another showdown where people are expressing their anger about the New York SAFE Act.
I just want to point something out. We political scientists love to deal with one word that is fascinating, and that is saliency. You never know when an issue is going to become the most important issue in people's minds that will make them behave politically in a particular way, like voting or protesting. For I think the most surprised guy in the world was Andrew Cuomo when the fracking took on that saliency on that side of the aisle. And then there is this whole business of the guns, which has become so important to so many people.
That's right. In fact, somebody in this article by Brian Fitzgerald is out there. They were burning blank registration forms, the kinds of forms you would need to register your assault weapon. And, you know, it's kind of a protest, a little barbecue out there. And he lit his fake Cuban cigar with it. And,
yeah.
And when you interview the fella, he said, well, I don't even own an assault weapon. But, you know, I just want to be here to support them. I mean, I think it does get a lot of popular support. And people are angry more than a year afterwards. And I can't imagine he would have, believed that it would have caused this much controversy this long after it.
But when we talk about popular support, I'm not just talking about popular support. I'm talking about the one thing that might make somebody vote in a particular way. Burning has been very popular in the United States. People have burned flags. People have burned
books,
bras.
Sure.
Yeah. Books.
I knew you were going there.
You did?
All right. Yeah, I just had a feeling.
Okay. And draft cards. Remember
right,
that?
Right, sure.
So burning has always been around.
Well, does this, Judy, in your mind, was this a tactical error for a man who may or may not wish to run on the national stage?
A national issue. I think it was a tactical, it was a good decision from a national perspective. I think that he will find, this will gain him support.
Really?
I thought he wanted to be right out there in front after Newtown.
Absolutely.
He wanted to be right out in front and showing he was a pioneer in this field. You know, and
a pioneer or someone in some fields, in many in New York will say, he rushed it. He used politics to rush this through.
I think there's a universal agreement that he rushed it. This is certainly a
rush
bill.
But by rushing it, he felt it was the only way he was going to get it.
Oh, he used, right, yeah. Exactly. It was a tactic to get it before the opposition could rise up and sway the legislators another way.
But gun rights advocates have always been a very powerful force
okay,
in this country.
Okay, and so that gets back to your original statement that this will ultimately, if he were to run nationally, be a positive. I would think that perhaps it's a negative given the fact that, unassailable point, Americans love their guns.
Hey, but have we seen any recent polls on the popularity of gun control? I think that Americans do tend to still are in the majority favoring gun control. Mm-hmm. You do see these opposition groups up. In Saratoga County, the Board of Supervisors voted a month or so ago to ban any reference to the New York Safe Act on any county correspondence. In Schoharie County, they have said that they don't want one dime of or one penny of county money spent in any way to enforce the New York Safe Act. You see those kind of things, but are they pervasive and will they impact people at the polls? I think some people will vote on this issue, but I don't think a tremendous number of people
will. I have not explained myself well.
Okay.
I really have not. But when I'm talking about salience, you don't have to get a majority. You just have to get the people who, no matter what, we'll vote on that issue. That will be, so let's even say it's 10%,
of the
people. You lose your election. And that's why it becomes such a crucial thing.
These hot button issues like fracking and...
When I talk to people about Andrew Cuomo, and I do a lot, they inevitably say, they may not be in love with the guy, let's face it, but what they do is they think he's able to get things done. And this business about forcing this thing through, that number one issue is getting things done, making Albany a better place, he gets a lot of credit for it. I happen to think some of the credit he gets for some of the stuff like, the Moreland Act Commission stuff is overdone because I don't think it's worked out. But he gets credit for doing that. And the guns are one example of it.
But doesn't it surprise you, panel, that in this, the bluest of blue states, and with already strong gun control laws, some of the strongest in the country, that there is this backlash?
Not in upstate New York, though. You will see a backlash about gun control in upstate New York all the time. It's been, how powerful has it been? It's been pretty steady, but it is lessened since the gun control Safe Act was enacted a year ago.
And it is upstate New York, and it's the population is not nearly as dense and more liberal than downstate New York in the New York City area, where I think he gets a lot more support.
Oh, sure.
For this kind of thing. And overall, it could be, you get enough of these little hot button issues or salient issues, as you say, and it could really switch things.
Do you remember when Ed Koch got into all that trouble? He was up here. And he said, upstaters, drive pickup trucks with a rifle in the rear window.
Yeah.
And boy, did he get kicked around.
Yes.
It became symbolic of the identity.
It elevated, it basically opened the way for Mario Cuomo to be elected.
But is it an issue in any of the campaigns or any of the elections we're going to hold this fall? Are there any assembly or Senate races this has become an issue in? I haven't heard it yet.
Well, interestingly, that's a very profound point because remember, Judy, that he got the Senate Republicans to go along with him. And many of those guys are beginning to get Tea Party type, opponents. So we'll have to see whether it does have legs or not.
A couple of minutes left here on the roundtable, and we should mention that our own area here has a couple of representatives in March Madness. And Mike, it's pretty big day for UAlbany.
Yes, it is. UAlbany's men's basketball team won their conference, the American East Conference, in a game at Stony Brook yesterday. They will go on and be one of the play-in and participate in one of the play-in games. It'll be Tuesday.
Tomorrow night.
Dayton, Ohio.
6:30 or 7.
What does that mean, play-in?
Yeah, how does that work? Because I thought they were given an automatic spot in the 64.
Well, they are. They're in the tournament. But instead of 64 teams, they get to have like 68 teams, and they have these early games to...
So they're just in the dance, but they might not have been before this.
Can they go all the way like the U.S.
Could they go all the way?
They certainly could.
except that if they win...
They're number 16 seed. It's unlikely statistically. Yeah. Warren Buffett might have something to say about that.
And what about the women?
That's another great story.
Yeah, where they're going to be, how they're going to be, they'll be seated higher. They're a strong team, and they're expected to maybe get past a few rounds. Although the men's team could also, because they're going to play a team from Maryland, Mount St. Mary's of Maryland, which has a similar record, has played some of the same teams that UAlbany has played and kind of split them, so it could happen.
If they win that, then they play the one seed, And that's where it gets dicey for UAlbany. The women's team, I don't know if you've had a chance to see UConn. I mean, they win every
Sergeant
year.
Sergeant Preston.
And I watched them a week or two ago. That is, they would destroy the New York Knicks. They are such a great team.
Now, speaking of UConn, it was on St. Patrick's Day several years ago. I can't remember the exact year when the play-in game was UAlbany against UConn.
The men's, right? Yeah.
And until 10 minutes, until there were just 10 minutes left in the game, UAlbany led that game.
Don't you hate that?
Had a surprising upset, but they didn't.
Well, it's wonderful for this area, and a lot of eyes will be watching tomorrow night. And again, I think Ian Pickus told me it was 6:30, but it I know you'll be watching, Alan. You want to come over and have a couple of beers and watch the game?
Sports is the opiate of the proletariat.
Do you guys broadcast any of these games?
You know, it's tough. It's very tough to broadcast sports on public radio, and there have been some public radio stations who have tried it, who have gotten in trouble. College stations, one thing. Public radio stations, another. And I read an interesting story about...
Why?
What's the issue?
Because of...
It's like the opera. It has
commercials, basically, because of commercials that are embedded in almost every sports broadcast nowadays.
They come in and you ask for money.
Yeah.
Well, what if there was a Quidditch match going on?
But I can tell you... Isn't it the Siena radio station? That does pretty well.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's
of the basketball games.
Absolutely. All right, that's their team. All right, we're done. And Alan Shartok, thank you very much, and thanks for the mothership mention. We'll get on that story next time. Judy Patrick, The Daily Gazette, thank you for being here.
Hi, you're welcome.
And our Mike Spain, thanks a lot. We'll see you, and we'll be checking out your websites. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.